Hi, everyone. My name is Dan Heath. This is the So You Want to Write a Book podcast. I saw a survey recently from Eventbrite, you know, the online event planning people, and they had asked people what was on their bucket list. And 44% of people said writing a book was on their bucket list. In fact, it was number two in the ranking. The only thing higher was the desire to travel to every continent. That was number one. And then further down the list, 31% of people said they wanted to go to a concert featuring their favorite artist or band before they died. And my instinct was, hey, start with that one. Because let me tell you, buying a concert ticket is a heck of a lot easier than writing a book. So check that one off and then see how you feel. And then maybe take the book second. But we're going to take the book project seriously in this podcast. There's three clusters of stuff I want to talk to you about. The first is basically how does a book get published, more of the industry slash business side. The second cluster is about the writing side. How do you write a book? And I have a couple of suggestions from my own experience. And then third is something that you wouldn't have asked for and may not want, but I take faith in your ability to turn it off if you don't want it. And that's more of a decision-making frame. You know, is writing the book the right thing for me? And I have a couple of like decision-making tips to figure out whether it is or it isn't. I feel like I should start with some disclaimers here. So let me just be crystal clear. I am no expert on any of this stuff, on writing, on the publishing industry, on anything. I'm not an expert on anything. I'm just a guy who's written five books, and I have acquired a lot of knowledge and experience as a result of doing that. And that may put me slightly ahead of the road than you are at this moment in terms of the book publishing industry. And that's why I'm doing this podcast. Maybe I can bring you along to where I am. But keep in mind, there are plenty of people that know a lot more than me. So go looking for their advice too. The other disclaimer, maybe two more, if you'll forgive me. One is, I know a particular kind of book. You know, Chip and I have been doing these kind of psychology slash business slash self-help mashup books. And the process is entirely different, I suspect, for writing a novel, so or another kind of book, a memoir or historical nonfiction. So just keep that in the back of your mind. I'm a guy who knows how to hammer one kind of nail. And then the third thing is, I hate to use my own experience as a model for you because I think in a lot of ways it was very weird and very lucky, the experience that Chip and I had. For one thing, the actual process of writing started with, there was an editor at Random House that tracked Chip down after Chip had written an article in a publication about why urban legends are so sticky. So, you know, major publishing house editor calls up my brother, kind of poking around to see if there might be enough meat to make a book, and that was the book that became Made to Stick. So we didn't go through the traditional gauntlet, and it is a gauntlet of trying to find an agent and get a deal. We kind of had this door opened, which was a wonderful stroke of luck. And then on top of that stroke of luck, we had a second stroke of luck, which was we got this big burst of publicity for Made to Stick. We've never had another comparable burst since, to be honest, for any of our other books. I mean, we were on the Today Show in the first week of the book's release, which was, needless to say, not what we expected. We expected to sell about 15 copies to our family and go back to our lives. So I can't reproduce that. I think if you reran reality 10 times, you know, we're in the one reality where we ended up with a hit book. So what I'm going to talk about is the more normal process, not the freak win the lottery process that Chip and I experienced. So let's start with that publishing side. So the basic flow here is pretty simple. It's three steps: proposal, agent, publisher. You write a book proposal, then you try to find an agent to represent you. The agent goes and shops your proposal around to publishers, and they may or may not offer you a deal as a result. So that's the three-step process. The proposal stuff, you can find just oodles of information about book proposals online. Just do your basic Googling, and you'll be well served by that. So I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty of the format. I don't think that's worth our time together. But I do want to make one big point, and I think this is a classic mistake that authors make, and including Chip and me, and that is authors treat the proposal as if it's intended to answer the question, how good of a writer am I? Like, we want to show off our skills. But really, the proposal is a sales document. It's designed to answer the question, how do I know that you, Mr. or Ms. Writer, are going to sell books for me? So if you think about it through that lens, it's very clarifying. You know, the publisher is going to want to see a writing sample, but the way that's getting filed in their mind is it's not like they're thinking, oh man, what wonderful writing talent. We really want to nurture this talent. Not to be cynical, but basically what they're thinking is, okay, we can eliminate that risk from our business proposition, right? That it is no longer a risk that this person turns in a manuscript that's unpublishable, so check. And then once they can get over that basic hurdle of, can we trust this person to turn in a publishable manuscript, I think most of their attention is going to go to, is there a market for this book? Who's going to want it? You know, are there people that are crying out for what this author has? And can this author personally be a major force in helping us sell this book? And that's what, there's this horrible industry buzz term called platform. Does the author have a platform? What is a platform? Well, a platform is like, I've got 500,000 Twitter followers, or I'm an influencer on Instagram, or I speak at 100 conferences a year. That's a platform. And what a platform basically boils down to is, do you have a way, you as a human being, to move a lot of books without the publisher's help? That's what they're looking for. Because the publisher has some tools to sell books that they will bring to bear for you. But as a friend of mine, Todd Satterston, told me many, many years ago, he said, you are the CEO of your book. And that is one of the truest statements I've ever been told about publishing. Like, you are the one with the most at stake. You are the one with the most to gain. You know the book best. You know how to sell it best. You know who it's intended for best. And you've got to take the reins. And so the publisher in the proposal is looking for signs that you know that, and that you have a plan, and that you have some kind of unfair advantage in selling books. So I know, you know, a lot of people that are writers, first and foremost, may hear that and feel a little depressed, but that's the reality, is you've got to make the sales case even more than you've got to make the can I write case. All right, so that's my sermonette on the proposal. Now for agents, my experience in talking to other authors has been that finding an agent can be the hardest part of the process. So let me give you just a couple of tips. How do you find an agent? You know, do you just Google agent? No. What you can do, and this is just a wonderful gift that the universe has given us. You know how actors, when they accept their Academy Awards, they always thank their agent. Well, so do authors. And in every book, there's an acknowledgments section that you can find. So my advice to you is, for whatever kind of book you're envisioning, find the 5 books that are most similar to what you have in mind. Go track them down in the bookstore, flip to the acknowledgments section, and figure out who the author's agent is. And hopefully, you know, out of your 5 books or 10 books that you check, you'll hit the same name a couple of times, and well, that's who you start with. Because you want an agent that's used to representing the kind of book that you write. And you can easily find their names via exactly that process. So write your proposal, get a bunch of feedback on it, go figure out who your best targets are for agents, and then go through whatever process. They usually talk about what process they accept on their websites. And then hope for the best. Once you have an agent, they're going to want to make a bunch of tweaks to your proposal to improve it, and then they'll start shopping it. And that part of the process may actually be less anxiety-making than the finding an agent part. I want to talk a little bit about the business model for writing. This is something that when authors talk to me, they're obviously keen to understand that. And so let me just map out the basic structure, because I think it's unfamiliar to a surprising number of people. Authors get what's called an advance. You've probably heard that term before. And an advance is a loan that the publishers give you against your future royalties. But there's a wonderful thing about this loan that's unlike lots of loans, you don't have to pay it back. And there's no penalties if you never pay it back. So let me just give you kind of a case study so you understand what I'm talking about. Let's say that your book is going to be retailed at $20. That's the cover price. So when you open up the book, you look at the flap, that's the $20. Amazon might have it for $12, but on the cover it says $20. Okay, so the norm in the industry, and this is true of everybody, by the way, big, successful, famous authors as well as first-time authors, you get 15% of hardcover royalties. That's the norm. So if your book retails for 20, not retails, if your book has a cover price of $20, you get $3. So your first reaction might be, well, wait a second. I'm the author of the book. I wrote every word. I'm getting $3 out of the $20 cover price. Well, yes, I share your sense of aggrievement. I will be part of whatever movement you found to address that. But actually, it's not that bad. Because think about it this way. If your book has a cover price of $20, that means your publisher is selling it to retailers like Amazon and Barnes & Noble for $10. You know, it's basically like half the cover price is the wholesale price. And so, you know, when you think about it that way, the publisher is getting $10 and you're getting three of the 10. But of course, the publisher has all the costs. They're doing the printing of the books. They're doing the distribution. They had a bunch of, you know, marketing and editorial staffers working for you. So when you think about it that way, it doesn't seem quite so extreme. And meanwhile, you know, Amazon's going to sell that book for $12. So Amazon keeps two and your publisher keeps 10. And of their 10, they give you three. Anyway, that's probably too much in the weeds for what you care about. But so back to your cut. You get $3 as a royalty. And let's say you get an advance of $30,000. So you had your agent, you shop your proposal, you got a deal for $30,000. They write you a check. And usually it comes in tranches. You know, maybe you get a quarter up front and a quarter 6 months later and so forth. And the advance is kind of a noble invention for writers because, you know, the right kind of advance can free you up to give you the time to finish the book. You know, if you're writing some kind of historical nonfiction and you've got to spend 6 months in the Library of Congress doing your research, like the advance is kind of like a wage that could keep you from having to go take a full-time job somewhere else. That's the intent. So it's a wonderful structure. And so back to the scenario, you get a $30,000 advance, you get $3 per book in royalties. So what this means is you have to sell 10,000 books, $3 times 10,000 is 30,000. You have to sell 10,000 books before you start earning royalties. Did you catch that? So what I mean is, if you sell one book, you buy one yourself, and that's the only one that ever sells, then you still get to keep that $30,000 advance. You don't have to pay it back. It's a loan that you don't have to repay. If you sell 10 books, you're good. If you sell 100 books, you're good. But you're not earning any more money off those books until you reach 10,000. Because when you sell your 10,000th book, that means you've repaid the publisher for your advance, $30,000. And when you hit the 10,001st book, that's when you get your first royalty check for $3. So that's the way the economics work. And I should tell you that in the industry, most books don't earn out their advance, which is kind of a weird thing, right? So there's all of these loans that are out there paid to writers that were not recouped, that were not repaid because the books didn't sell enough copies. And so you say, well, how can an industry survive that's constantly overpaying writers? Well, it's kind of like venture capital, you know, in the sense that a venture capital fund might invest in 10 companies and six of them flame out and two of them do okay, and two of them are hits, and the two hits pay for all the others. Same thing in publishing. So you have a lot of books that don't pay out their advance, and then, you know, once a year you have something like 50 Shades of Grey, and it just makes everybody rich and pays for all the other authors. So thank you, 50 Shades of Grey. As a tangent, 1 year at Random House, that was a Random House book, all the employees got a bonus because of that book. It's a beautiful thing. So that's the structure. As you can tell, that puts a lot of weight on how much that advance is, because that may be the only money you ever see from your book. And so I know your next question is, well, how much is the advance? And it kind of reminds me of, imagine if someone came up to you and said, I want to get a job. How much does a job pay? And you're sort of like, well, it depends on what the job is. And the same thing here. It depends on who you are as an author. It depends on what genre the book is in, your sales track record, if you have one. I mean, an advance could go anywhere from $5,000 to $25 million and probably up from there for some of the global stratospheric authors. I feel reluctant to even give you benchmarks because I know they're going to imprint in your brain more than they probably should, because the truth is I don't know. I don't have the industry record of advances. My guess is if you're you know, say you're a business consultant and you've got an interesting idea for a business book and you've got some ability to reach people, you've got decent numbers on social media, maybe you do some speeches, but you don't have, you know, any sort of mega platform. My guess is you're going to get an advance in the tens of thousands of dollars, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000. If you are a hotshot professor with a really unique topic, lots of people know your work. It's been, you know, cited on NPR and Freakonomics, and there's some buzz behind it. You know, you're probably going to get in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. There are a few lucky people that get seven digit advances. And then, of course, you know, the Stephen Kings of the world are in a whole nother league altogether. That's as much as I feel like I can truthfully say about the economics. It's all over the board, but that gives you a feel for what you're up against. So, of course, for most authors, the situation is going to be you get offered an advance that on a per hour basis is not that great. You know, it will not make you rich. It will not pay you more if you're a professional than your day job. And so the question ultimately becomes one of, I'm not doing this for the financial motive. Are the other motives sufficient to make me want to take on this role? We'll come back to that later. I want to skip ahead now to the second block of stuff, which is about how do you write a book? You know, what are the mechanics of that? And I would recommend there is more content on the web than you could ever imagine about writing habits and overcoming procrastination and routines for productivity. And I don't really want to get into any of that stuff in this podcast because there's so much out there. You could really geek out. I just want to make three quick points. And I'm trying also to just avoid giving you the way I do things because I don't think that matters. If there's 100 writers, there's 100 different habits that have been formed. But I want to give you something that may be extensible to you. And the first thing I would say is, I think momentum is so important in writing a book. And what I mean by that is just sheerly having a number of days in a row that you're able to write so that you're not spending a lot of overhead time like recreating. What was I trying to say here? And let me get my thoughts together. And what was the research I was trying to get across to readers and blah, blah, blah. So especially if you have a day job and you're thinking about doing a book on the side, I would tell you, I would try to find some weird period in the year when you think maybe you could write 20 or 25 days out of 30. Maybe it's the light time in the calendar year for you and whatever business you're in. Maybe you can combine it with some vacation time. But I think it's critical to get that momentum going. Like to me, if you can write 25 times in 30 days, that's way more useful than writing 50 times over 2 years. You see what I'm getting at? You just become more and more efficient and more motivated and more productive. It's just like learning a language. Like imagine if you could spend, you know, hours a day, 25 out of 30 days learning a new language versus doing lessons kind of sporadically 50 times over 2 years. You have the intuition that you'd be better off with the former. So that's the first point, momentum. Second point is a methodology that we describe, Chip and I, in our book Switch called Finding the Bright Spots. And finding the bright spots is a very simple idea. It just means you study what works. So writers, we all like to moan and groan about, you know, all the pitfalls of writing and, you know, how easy it is to lose focus and get distracted and writer's block. Well, flip that around and say, hey, when I'm doing a great job writing, when I'm feeling really productive, when things are really going, when I'm feeling great about the work, what are those conditions? And I have learned so much just from kind of pointing that lens at myself over the years. You know, basically my entire ritual for writing has come from just observing when I do well at writing and ignoring the parts when I don't. And so what I've learned is I like to have a long shift starting in the morning. I try like hell to avoid getting into email at any point. I don't schedule calls. I want it to be an uninterrupted block. I like to write in coffee shops. I like to listen to music. I've got headphones on. I mean, those are all the elements of my ritual. And again, I don't think that ritual means anything to you. But the Bright Spots methodology will, because what you may discover is that you're at your best when you're, you know, writing in a closet with total silence and it's midnight and the rest of your family is asleep. So just as you begin this work, be monitoring yourself for the times when you're at your best, and then try to replicate those conditions. Okay, third thing is feedback is absolutely critical. And that may sound obvious, but I think there's a couple of mistakes that writers make. One is waiting too long to get feedback. If you're 95% done with your work and then you go circulate it for feedback and you get negative feedback, what's your reaction going to be? You're too invested by that point to really take it seriously, aren't you? I mean, are you really going to rewind the clock and start over? I mean, it's just too emotionally painful. You have to put up your guards and convince yourself that all those people giving you feedback are idiots. You need feedback when you can use feedback. And so what I would encourage you to do is to come up with a dummy draft and set yourself a deadline that's halfway through your master timeline. So if you've got a year deadline with your publisher, set an intermediate deadline for 6 months. You know, do your best to hack something together. It's going to be rough. That's the whole point. In fact, it helps if it is rough, because that will arm you to take the feedback more seriously and not feel wounded. You know, all authors have our sensitive egos. So make sure, number one, you've got the runway to accept feedback. And then I want to say two things about what kind of feedback I've found helpful. Maybe you find different stuff helpful, but this has been true for me. I talked to an entrepreneur years ago, and he gave this analogy about market research. He said, you know, you couldn't have a focus group and ask people, like, what kind of beer do you want to drink? People aren't good at that. They'll probably give you answers, but you can't really trust those answers because people don't have a language for articulating their optimal beer. But what you can absolutely trust people to say is, do you like beer A better than beer B? And I think the same thing is true, and this is kind of a weird analogy, to books. I rarely ask people for global feedback about the books that I've written with Chip. What we like to do is get into the particulars and say, you know, did you like this story? Did you find this concept useful? You know, get them in the weeds. You know, it's kind of like the do you like this beer question. Everybody knows how to answer that in a trustworthy way. If we ask people, what did you think of the structure of the book, or you know, how would you reframe the book to improve it? We may get answers, but I'm not sure we'd be able to trust those answers. People aren't used to thinking in those kind of meta terms about books. So figure out ways that you can get those like, don't like kind of samples. I think those are really reliable. And the other thing I would say that's related to that is, because everybody's tastes are a little bit different, you know, one person likes beer A and one person likes beer B, you've got to get some volume in your feedback. So don't just get advice from, you know, your spouse and your agent and two other random people that you trust. I think you got to have numbers. I think you got to have a dozen or dozens, just because that will help some of the idiosyncrasy of the tastes wash out. When one person says they don't like chapter 3, can you trust that? Maybe not. But if 9 out of 12 people say they don't like chapter 3, you probably got a problem. That's my advice on the writing side of things. Again, there's just an infinity of material about how writers do their work online. There's books written about it. But remember those three things: the momentum point, the bright spots point, and the feedback point. And then for the final part of our show, I want to give you something unsolicited. And that's more of some decision-making advice around, hey, do I really want to write a book? Is that how I should be spending my precious time on Earth? You know, back to that statistic, the 44% of people have writing a book on their bucket list. My guess is the vast majority of those people will never write a book, and that's probably a good thing. That, you know, just like we all understand the yearning to climb Mount Everest, like probably there's part of us that all would like to climb Mount Everest, and yet the vast majority of us never will, and that's probably a good decision for us. I know it is for me. And I think the same thing is true with books. It's such a massive commitment that I think you need to really check yourself in a couple of ways to make sure it's a commitment that's wise for you. So the first thing I would say, and if you've read Decisive, you'll recognize this term, is can you ooch? Ooch means to try like a small test or a small experiment of something. So this is just the obvious point of, if you think you want to write a book, maybe start with an article first, just to warm up the works, make sure the writing process is something that you're enjoying, you know, see how your audience is responding to your ideas. You know, if you think you may want to climb Everest someday, maybe start with a hill first. The second thing is, and this is kind of an opportunity cost point, if you frame your decision as should I write a book or not, that's a dangerous framing. We have a whole rant about this in Decisive about the danger of whether or not decisions, because the reality is not is not a very compelling alternative, right? When you frame things as whether or not, should I buy this thing or not? Not doesn't make a very good case for itself. And so you end up inevitably leaning toward the choice that's on the table, in this case, writing a book. The way to make a better decision is to even up the stakes. So if you're thinking about writing a book, you've got to understand, I mean, that's hundreds, if not thousands, of hours that you're contemplating committing to the project. And the way to make sure you make a good decision is to say, what if I couldn't write a book, but I wanted to scratch the same itch that has led me to consider it? Maybe it's a creative thing for you. You need a creative outlet. The question is, if you couldn't write a book, how would you scratch that creative itch? Would you, you know, spend more time reading novels? Would you get involved with improv comedy? Would you, maybe you used to love to draw, you pick up drawing or painting again? You know, that's really the decision you're making is, when I think about those hundreds or thousands of hours, are they better allocated toward writing a book, or are they better allocated toward improv comedy or whatever that number two thing on your list is? Then you can make a wise decision choosing between those options. Same thing is true if I've met a lot of business type people that, you know, they're not really writers in their souls, but they think that the book could do something for them. The book is kind of a means to an end. Maybe it helps them get more speaking gigs or get more clients or build their reputation in a certain industry or whatever. I think the same question is also true there. For whatever business itch you're trying to scratch, what is the next best way that you could accomplish that without writing a book? And then when you see those options side by side on the table, you can make a wise choice between those. All right, so that's the second point. And then the third point is, and this may be obvious, but it's such a long process and such a big commitment that I think you should really test yourself. Do you get joy out of the process? You know, it's like all those cliches that we see online about it's about the journey, you know, and in this case, I think it kind of is about the journey. And if the journey is a burden, if the journey is a struggle, if the journey is something that you roll your eyes because you got to spend part of your Saturday working on this book, don't do it. You know, it's voluntary. So how can you test this? Well, a couple of things I would test is, do you feel like you're in the flow state when you write? The flow state, you may be familiar with the term, is when you feel like the world kind of disappears and you're really absorbed in your work and you may lose track of time. The flow state is not necessarily like it's not like a giddy, euphoric feeling. It's more of just pure absorption. Like you're so far in something that the world around you kind of shrinks. And I really enjoy that feeling, and that's something that I get when I write. And that makes it a lot more addictive to me to write. Now, to be clear, like on a day-to-day basis, I mean, I'm still procrastinating. I'm still, you know, struggling to get over the hump and get into that flow state. I'm still anxious about deadlines. I mean, it is not like a string of nonstop happiness, but it does feel absorbing in a way that's really reinforcing. And so test yourself to see whether that's true for you. If all of the upside for you kind of hinges on the ending, like if it feels like struggle, and then someday I'm going to have a hit book, that's probably not a good equation to bet on. But if it feels like, hey, I enjoy the process of doing this, I like to write, I'll be proud of having written something, and then if it sells a lot of copies, that will be an unexpected bonus. That's a mindset that I would bet on. Okay, I'm at 30 minutes here. My God, that's more advice than you ever wanted or asked for. I think in closing, I would just say there has been so much written on this. I think it's such a universal aspiration to want to write a book. It makes other people think and write about it, which is great for our purposes. One of my favorites is a book called On Writing from Stephen King, and I would highly recommend it. It's kind of part memoir from him and part constructive/practical advice. And there's something just very affirming and heartwarming about hearing Stephen King, who's probably a billionaire from his words, talk about the gauntlet of rejection he endured early in his career, and just story after story rejected, and he keeps the letters. And that's inspiring to me, just his grit to stick through that and keep writing. And I think he has a lot of wise and practical things to say for people like us who are thinking about this. I hope you found this interesting, and good luck in your book project.